Chapter 4, What Do You Believe? The great question at the core of your life. We've described how our beliefs work and why they have the power to change our bodies and our lives. With such a force shaping everything from the success of our relationships to how long we live, it makes tremendous sense to ask about our own beliefs. Where do they come from? How do they play out in life? And perhaps most importantly, what do we believe? Not what do we think we believe or what we would like to believe, but what do we truly believe about our world, other people, and ourselves? The honest answer to these seemingly innocent questions opens the door to our greatest realizations and our deepest healing. In the absence of such understanding, life's deepest mysteries often remain unanswered. Dying from a belief. Early in life, we develop our core beliefs, basic ideas that we accept about ourselves, other people, and our world. Core beliefs can either be positive or negative, life-affirming or life-denying. Childhood experiences are often where our core beliefs begin. After repeated experiences of hearing, for example, that we don't deserve this or we don't deserve that, we may develop a core belief that we aren't worthy of receiving. Because such beliefs are often unconscious, it's not unusual to discover that they weave their way throughout our lives and do so in unexpected ways. So an unconscious core belief that we aren't worthy of receiving may play out as a lifetime of lack that shows up in love, money, and success, and even life itself. A few years ago, a dear friend shared a story with me that brought tears to my eyes. It's a beautiful example of just how much power a core belief in our hearts can have on our lives. She described how her father had died following a short battle with a particularly aggressive form of cancer at the age of 75. While she accepted my condolences when I told her I was sorry for her loss, it was what I heard next that makes this story so relevant. Although my friend and her family were certainly saddened by the loss of the man that was so central in their lives, she said that they were not really surprised. Ever since she was a young girl, her father had believed he would not live beyond 75 years of age. Although he was a healthy and vital man and had no real reason to expect that his life would end abruptly, it was just something that he believed. As his own father had died at the age of 75, in his mind, his father's lifespan was the model. It helped him to structure his time here on earth. He shared his belief with his family for as long as anyone could remember. Although he may have wanted to live longer, and certainly enjoyed spending time with his friends and family, he was not angry or disappointed by the thought of leaving the world after only 7.5 decades of life. Based upon the previous chapters of this book, and the power that we know is held in our beliefs, what comes next should be no surprise. On the man's 75th birthday, his family and friends surrounded him to help him celebrate. Shortly thereafter, he was stricken with cancer. Following a brief battle with the disease, he died, just as he believed he would before the end of his 75th year on earth. When we hear stories such as this, we find ourselves asking, is it simply a coincidence? Is it a coincidence that someone's lifespan just happens to conform precisely to his or her expectation? Or the expectation of those in his or her family? Or is it something more? With the renaissance of interest in the mind-body connection that began in the late 20th century, new studies are appearing almost weekly in scientific and mainstream journals that identify a direct link between the way we think and feel in our bodies and the way that the body functions. It's that link that plays out in our everyday lives, just as the story of my friend's father demonstrated. While the previous story illustrates the power that a belief can hold for one person, could that power run even deeper in a way that affects us all? Is it possible, for example, that collectively we share in a belief that's so common and affects us on such a deep level that it has actually established the limits of the human lifespan? And if so, can that belief be healed and the limit changed? The answer to both of these questions is yes. The source of such a belief may surprise you. Do we die before our time? Have you ever wondered why we die after only 70 or 100 years in this world? Aside from the obvious trauma of things like war, murder, accidents, and poor lifestyle choices, what is the real cause of death in humans? Why is it that the odds of continuing a healthy, vital, and meaningful life seem to work against us as we pass what is often considered midlife and later approach the 100-year mark? Well, here's a clue. The answer is not simply old age. Among scientists, medical professionals, and scholars alike, there's an agreement that our bodies have a miraculous ability to sustain life. Of the estimated 50 trillion or so cells that live within the average human, most are documented with the ability to repair and reproduce themselves and do so throughout our entire lifespan. In other words, we're constantly replacing and rebuilding ourselves from the inside out. Until recently, scientists believed that there were two exceptions to this phenomenon of cell reproduction. Interestingly, these are the cells of the two centers that are most closely identified with the spiritual qualities that make us who we are, our brain cells and our heart cells. Although new studies have now shown that the cells of these organs do have the ability to regenerate themselves, it also appears that they are so resilient, they can last a lifetime and don't necessarily need to. So now we're back to the original question. Why does our lifespan appear to hover around the 100-year mark? What is it that takes our lives? With the exception of misused medicines and misdiagnosed conditions, the greatest killer of adults over the age of 65 is heart disease. I find this statistic fascinating, because of the work that our hearts are built to do and how well they do it. Our hearts appear to be so vital to who and what we are that they're the first organs to form in our mother's wombs, even before our brains. The average human heart will beat approximately 100,000 times a day for each day of our lives. Well, in engineering terms, when the success of an entire project depends upon a single piece of equipment, that piece of equipment is given the status of mission critical. Clearly, the miraculous organ that feeds lifeblood to every cell of our bodies is developed, either by conscious design or natural processes, to be the body's most self-healing and long-lasting mission critical piece of equipment. So any time the loss of someone we love is attributed to what is called the failure of such a magnificent organ, we've got to ask ourselves, what really happened to that person? Why would the first organ to develop in someone's body, and one that performs so impressively and for so long, with cells that are so enduring that they don't even need to reproduce, simply stop working after only a few short decades? It makes no sense unless there's another factor that we haven't considered. Modern medicine typically attributes heart conditions to a wide array of physical and lifestyle factors, ranging from cholesterol and diet to environmental toxins and stress. While these factors may be accurate on a purely chemical level, they do little to address the actual reason that the conditions exist. What does failure of the heart really mean? Well, perhaps it's not a coincidence that all of the lifestyle factors linked to heart failure are also linked to the forces that speak to the universe itself, to human emotion, feeling, and belief. Is there something that we feel over the course of our lives that can lead to the catastrophic failure, the most important organ in our body? Well, the answer is yes. The hurt that kills. A growing body of evidence from leading-edge researchers suggests that hurt may be what leads to the failure of our hearts. Specifically, the unresolved negative feelings that underlie chronic hurt, our beliefs regarding what life has shown us, are what have the power to create the physical conditions that we recognize as cardiovascular disease, tension, inflammation, high blood pressure, and clogged arteries. This mind-body relationship was documented recently in a landmark study at Duke University directed by James Blumenthal. He identified long-term experiences of fear, frustration, anxiety, and disappointment as examples of the kind of heightened negative emotions that are destructive to the heart and put us at risk. Each is part of a broader umbrella that we commonly identify simply as hurt. Belief Code 19 reminds us that our beliefs about unresolved hurt can create physical effects with the power to damage or even kill us. What Blumenthal's study showed was that teaching people to do what he called toning down their emotional responses to life situations could prevent heart attacks. This is precisely the point of healing our hurt, specifically what we believe to be true about the things that have hurt us. Clearly, this study, along with others, isn't suggesting that it's bad or unhealthy to feel negative emotions in the short term. When we do feel these feelings in life, they are indicators, personal gauges, telling us that we've had an experience that's asking for attention and healing. It's only when we ignore these emotions and the beliefs that underlie them, and they go on for months, years, or a lifetime without being resolved, that they may become a problem. So could the answer to our question of why we die be that through the pain of life's disappointments, we've hurt ourselves to death? Commenting on this possibility, Blumenthal's study suggests that perhaps when people talk about dying of a broken heart, they're really saying that intense emotional reactions to loss and disappointment can cause a fatal heart attack. In the language of their time, ancient traditions suggest precisely this possibility.